Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 187, and we are beginning Mistborn Secret History parts 1 and 2. Elliot, how are you?
Doing great. I'm back to what the heck is going on state with reading a Sanderson work, but it's an exciting explored new territory. What the heck is going on state? So it's all good.
Paul, you have not read Secret History yet, correct? This is your first time?
Correct. This is my first time, and I must say, I'm already super enjoying it. It's kind of like being, I don't know, this is how I feel whenever there's like a new release chapter from book five of Stormlight or something like that, when it drops and it's, you're just like, okay, I know that everything going on here is going to be super pertinent and relevant, you know. And so it was very fun to read so far, so just getting started.
Sounds good. Really quick before we roll intro and get a summary from Elliot, moving forwards on the podcast, we are going to be removing our Stormlight spoiler veil. Anything that we have covered on the podcast is open for discussion, because there are too many things in here that would not be worth trying to tiptoe around and pretending like this other work is not extremely relevant to the topics that we're going to be discussing. So, from this point forward, unless we announce otherwise for a special episode or something, anything that we've covered on the podcast is within spoiler scope. So that would be all of Stormlight, Elantris, Warbreaker, Mistborn Era 1, and pretty much all of Arcanum Unbounded at this point. There might be a Mistborn Era 2 short story in there that we haven't covered yet.
And we should even throw in there Yumi and the Nightmare Painter.
Yes, Yumi and the Nightmare Painter.
There's interesting revelations in that work that could come into a lot of this.
Yes, and if you haven't read Yumi yet, and you're like, it's okay, I don't mind getting minor spoilers on Yumi, you should go read Yumi. You really should go read Yumi. It's really worth reading it, and then come back and enjoy the episode. So well, let's roll intro, and then we'll get a brief summary of parts 1 and 2 from Elliot. All right, Mistborn Secret History. How does it start, Elliot?
Yeah, I don't even know quite how to go about describing what happens in these chapters, but I'll take a stab at it. Kelsier dies, get a little rerun of that scene. But then we carry on the story in Kelsier's perspective, and he awakens in what he initially thinks is maybe the afterlife, or maybe the staging ground on the way to the afterlife. I think we recognize this fairly quickly as the cognitive realm, which I think he discovers throughout these chapters, perhaps. But he immediately comes in contact with preservation and has a lot of very interesting conversations with preservation. Kelsier manages to not die fully or get sent into the beyond, but manages to stay through the power in the Well of Ascension. He gets trapped in the Well of Ascension, and Hoyt shows up.
Yes, he does.
Would like to use the well as a portal. Kelsier tries to stop him, fails. Hoyt gets through. Kelsier witnesses various events, gets to interact with Ruin through the well, and get to know Ruin a little bit. And then after what we know is like at least a year worth of time, Elend and Vin show up at the Well of Ascension, as we expected would happen, because we know that side of events. And Kelsier stabs Elend. And that wraps up part two of the Mistborn Secret History.
Yes, indeed. There's several key things that happen in parts one and part two that are very interesting. But before we get to that, it was really evident to me, picking this back up really quickly, this does not feel like a professional, polished, like, fantasy book. Brandon Sanderson plays very loose, very fun, very free with the tone here. Paul, did you catch that where Kelsier just like punches Preservation in the face and like there's jokes throughout the whole episode? Like, did you catch on to that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's what stood out to me the most, is it was just like nonsensical. I mean, it didn't make sense, like all the stuff happened. And I could see how Kelsier is the one to be doing this. I think it's really funny that Kelsier is the one to just punch a shard in the face and just lay him out. You know, it's ridiculous. It's really fun. And this is the kind of content which I've really enjoyed our stories recently that we've been reading, Mistborn and Elantris. But this is the kind of just like random major Cosmere content list, because we haven't looked at this stuff in a while. It's really informational, but really ridiculous. And I think that's what makes it really, really, like, just enjoyable to read. Like, this is an absolute treat to just read through.
What about you, Elliot? Did you catch the fun tone?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Right off the bat. And as soon as Hoyd makes a prolonged appearance in a work, I'm ready for slightly silly, goofy, blunt for sure tone in a work. So yeah, I'm rolling with it. Very different from the darker, more ominous, deep themes work we just came out of.
And it's specifically modern Hoyd. This is not Final Empire Hoyd, where he shows up, says like three lines of dialogue that don't have much meaning and leaves. This is like Oathbringer Hoyd, where they'll show up, say things that are needlessly obtuse, as the quote is in this episode, and then deliberately mess with Kelsier and then go on his way. Something to point out, do you guys know the publication date of Secret History or Arcanum Unbounded?
I do not. If I had to predict, I would say that it came out either, I don't know. I actually don't know. In my head, it came out as maybe the beginning of Mistborn Era 2 or before Mistborn Era 2 came out. But I'm getting all mixed up on my timelines of those books. I don't know when those books were published, actually, in all honesty. So that could be way off.
I think I looked this up recently because I was curious what some of the next Leatherbound editions were coming out, because those come out roughly around the 10-year anniversary of each work. And Arcanum Unbounded was on that list because I want to say it was 2016.
Yep.
Did Arcanum Unbounded come out?
2016. You remember when The Final Empire, The Hero of Ages is published?
2011? 2012?
Yeah, my guess was around that time, anywhere from like maybe 2010 to 2012.
That's Nate.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So this is a full 8 years after The Hero of Ages is published that this comes out. So with all the maturity, Brandon Sanderson has written through Oathbringer at this point. He's left Mistborn alone, gone through the first three books of the Stormlight Archive, and hasn't published Oathbringer yet, but he has written it, and then goes back to touch on Mistborn Secret History. So there's a wide gap between what most people read this between, whereas you guys are reading it within 2 weeks of each other. So, with that in mind, we get several definitions and clarifications on everything that has to do with Cognitive Realm very quickly in this book. We get a definition of the Beyond, and we get spelled out in detail of what happens to a soul, at least on Scadrial, when it dies, which I know you guys have been wondering about, like, is there an afterlife, like, blah, blah, blah. That there's very specific answers, and then there's very specific non-answers from Preservation in this passage. And then as we go through, like we said, we get a modern Hoid. We get some very strange details about Hoid. Like, he's trying to do some sleight of hand unsuccessfully and stuff like that. Like, anyway, what do you guys want to talk about first? Let's actually start with Kelsier becoming a cognitive shadow, because between death and afterlife or the beyond on Scadrial, as far as we know, you get a brief interaction with Preservation. He's supposed to, like, greet you and say, you know, how is your life? Hi, blah, blah, blah. I'm God. And then you stretch into the beyond and you're gone. And Kelsier says, no, that's lame. We need a plan. How do I stop this? And so the first chapter, the first two chapters, are him frantically running around Luthadel, trying everything he can. And he eventually gets preserved. Is that a capitalized word in the book, Elliot? Preservation, like, set, like, says be preserved, Kelsier, or something, and then staples him to the Well of Ascension and says, "You're now tied to Preservation's power." Where's a Ruin's power?
So, what I want to ask y'all. My question is, so this is, I feel like this is the most we've directly seen a cognitive shadow. Kelsier here is a cognitive shadow, and we've known about that, we've known that exists, but while I know it exists and I know it is involved in, like, the investiture, how invested a person is, I don't know if I fully get it. Is he a cognitive shadow because he got to the stage and was just defiant? Or I imagine it actually involves, like, his investiture prior to dying, right? But I feel like this didn't give me a clear picture, or maybe I missed it, a clear picture of how he becomes a cognitive shadow. Is it like he was kind of almost predetermined when he died, and when he died, he's, like, more conscious because he is a cognitive shadow and was more invested? Is that kind of how it works, or is it... Am I off the mark here?
I'll let you give any input before I give my explanation.
Not really. Go for it.
Okay, so this ties into something that happens at the end of Rhythm of War. So, listener, if you have not read Rhythm of War or Stormlight, please go do that. When you die, and we just got this spelled out for us, when you die, you briefly enter the cognitive realm as your brain is still alive, as your thoughts and your essence is still alive, and as you begin to seep away into the beyond, those who are invested or highly invested spend or can spend longer in the cognitive realm than other people. So they're not required to have a living body anymore. They can live off their investiture, at least for a short time, in the cognitive realm. Are you with me so far?
Yes.
They don't have to, as we see at the end of part two here. No, at the end of part... Beginning of part two? End of part one? What? In this episode, when we see Rashik die, he willingly surrenders. So Kelsier asks Preservation, so if the Lord Ruler dies, would he spend a long time in the cognitive realm too? And Preservation says yes. So because they don't use the word investiture, because he has a lot of power, is what they say, he can spend a lot of time in the cognitive realm just living off of the investiture he had when he died, and then he can move into the beyond. So basically, what Preservation does here is, during that time in between, because Kelsier was Mistborn, he has an extended time as a cognitive shadow. During that time, Kelsier gets to the Well of Ascension, and then Preservation ties him to the power of the well. So basically, now, Kelsier can go anywhere in the cognitive realm that that power exists. So for the entirety of Part 2, that's the Well of Ascension. He can walk about 10 feet in the Well of Ascension because that's where the power is. But at the end of Part 2, when Vin releases the power, that would then imply he could go anywhere on Scadrial, because that's where the Shard is. Understand?
Yes. Yeah, that makes more sense. So just making sure I understand this, it's like he exists in the cognitive realm longer because he was a Mistborn, right? And then while he was there, Preservation stapled him to the Well of Ascension, and that's like the point where he becomes what we know as a cognitive shadow, right?
Right.
Like where he can continually exist in the cognitive realm.
And so, okay, as long as that power is sustained, as long as that shard is sustained, whether it's Preservation or Ruin, we'll get back to in a little bit, because it's actually unclear. Because both are there, but did he tie him to Preservation's power, or did he tie him to Ruin's power? Because Ruin was the one deliberately held in the well, and Preservation would seemingly be everywhere. So if he was tied to Preservation, you could argue that he already could go anywhere on Scadrial. But if he was tied to Ruin, Ruin was the one held in the Well of Ascension. And it was only after Vin released the power that he's allowed to leave it. So I would actually argue that it might be Ruin's power that he's now tied to. But we can maybe talk about that next week or later in this episode. Understand? You can be a cognitive shadow so long as the investiture is supporting you. Yes?
Yes. Got it. Yes, I get it.
Okay. So, this is a kind of an odd detail, and it doesn't really fit into the rest of the episode, but I do want to bring it up because Brandon Sanderson brings it up. At the beginning of Part 2, or maybe the end of Part 1 again, I don't remember, Inquisitors show up, and they dump the dead Inquisitor that Kelsier killed into the well, and he evaporates. Which we'll talk about that. Well, let's talk about that first. Did you guys tie that to Elantris at all?
I thought of it. I didn't tie it necessarily in a significant way, but taking the people who are suffering and or dead and tossing them in the pool, which is actually a perpendicularity. Yeah, we've seen that.
Yeah. I thought that was really weird, because then Preservation says, well, that's meaningless. Why? They don't know why they're doing this. I don't know why they're doing this. Who told them to do that? Why are they doing this? And then there's no answer to it. They just move on. Like, they put the dead body into the well. It evaporates. It doesn't come to the cognitive realm. It evaporates and it's gone.
I mean, even prior to being released, is Ruin influencing spiked people prior to being released? I feel like the answer is yes.
Yes.
So maybe Ruin, who is in the well, wants that power back somehow?
Maybe.
That's in the Inquisitor, or the spikes that are with the Inquisitor, or do they keep the spikes?
They keep the spikes.
They keep the spikes and they dump the body. Yeah, I don't know. That's weird.
On the practical side, yeah, I don't know why. I guess he just, you know, you can't just have all these bodies sitting around, you know.
Nice garbage disposal.
Practically, yeah, just practical application. It's, you know, better than letting them sit there, you know.
I guess. All right. And then Hoyt shows up. Hoyt and Kelsier have some really interesting dialogue. They go back and forth. I would hate to be in a room with these two, because both of these two are insufferable and arrogant. And they immediately clash with their personalities. and they immediately don't like each other. And Kelsier just loses it on him and says, I'm going to murder you if you step into this well. And Owie's like, whoa, dude, calm down. You're fine. But Hoyt drops a few really interesting little factoids. He says, this is the only perpendicularity left on Scadrial because you killed the other one. Put a pin in that for a second. And by doing so, you stopped a bunch of traffic going in and out of Scadrial. So let's talk about the first one for a second. Okay. We suspected that the Well of Ascension was a perpendicularity. But by saying that, Hoyt confirms for us that the Pits of Hathsin were a perpendicularity. Was that a reveal for you guys, or did you suspect that?
I would say this is a reveal. Like, it's not, like, far-fetched, and the little, like, the him saying that obviously, like, points directly to that. But yeah, it was definitely a reveal. And I don't know, I guess I'm struggling to see how that is a perpendicularity. I'm like, logically, I'm like, were people crawling up out of the Pits of Hathsin? Like, once they're in the physical room? I don't know. You know, this seems a bit weird. It seems different from our other perpendicularities. We do know that it was a place where, one, we'd also know that, this is a different note, but we know that the Pits of Hathsin, like the, maybe it's different from the ATM geodes or whatever themselves, or the things that produce the ATM, but we know that those will regenerate over time. Like, he didn't permanently destroy it forever. Like, they will come back later. Yeah, I don't know. What kind of traffic was supposed to come through there also? That's my other question.
I think it was discussed at one point that when ATM gets burned or spent, it coalesces back at the Pits of Hathsin.
Yep.
Which, that kind of wording sounds like a pool of water. It's never described like that, but that concept of the power goes out, gets spent, and then drains back into this pool, figurative sense of the word pool, at the Pits of Hathsin.
Where's that science book clip art of the water cycle?
That's exactly what I was about to say. Exactly. The water cycle, but yep. For ATM.
The ATM cycle. Yep.
Right.
Somebody make us an art for the ATM cycle, yeah, please.
It's like harvested, burned, you know, digested, burned. I don't know, but re-absolved through the cognitive realm. I don't know. I don't know how it goes. I don't know if it'd be much of a circle, but the ATM process, you know. Yeah.
But basically all of that to maybe explain that the pits are just a high concentration of investiture, and maybe that's all it takes to get a perpendicularity, is you gotta have that super high concentration of investiture all in one spot. Maybe that's all the pits is.
Part of me wonders if Bruin was wounded there or something, or maybe the imprisoning happened there and then the well was where he ended up or something like that. But anyway, I would assume because of that there's an underground lake under the Pits of Hathsin somewhere, because we have never seen a perpendicularity that was not liquid. But that doesn't mean it couldn't exist, I suppose. In theory, you could freeze one and turn it solid. So, Pits of Hathsin are a perpendicularity. And Kelsier, A, was able to destroy it. Let's talk about that for a second. With Allomancy, he's able to kill, to destroy, or at least wound and have it regenerate over several hundred years, Ruin's perpendicularity. How? Like, what does that mean? Can we go destroy cultivations on Roshar with like void binding or something? Like, how did, what are the implications of that? I don't, help me out with this one.
I was thinking about that. So doesn't that mean that it's not a body of water, that it's some way tied to the, like, because I mean, I feel like I'd have to go back and reread it, but he destroys the I keep calling them geodes, the like pods or whatever that the ATM is actually like formed in. He destroyed all of those, all the things that produce, all the roots or whatever that produce ATM. My understanding, and I mean, I could go back and reread it at some point, but my understanding is that's what was destroyed. Physically, that is all that is destroyed. So does the network of those, is that the perpendicularity itself? Is that what fuels the perpendicularity? Maybe that's like what fuels it. I don't know. Maybe it needs an... Do perpendicularities like typically have investiture involved? Did it like remove its... Hypothetically, if there is an underground lake, did it like remove its source of investiture or something? I don't know the mechanics of our perpendicularities, if it needs anything else or if it's just a physical location, but it seems weird to me. I feel like you couldn't do this with other perpendicularities. Like, think of cultivations. Like, I don't know, could you drain the water or something? I don't know. I feel like this one's, I don't know why.
So in my head, I keep thinking of allomancy as preservations, but isn't it both? Isn't it? I think ferrochemy is preservations, hemallergy is ruins, and allomancy is both. Is that right? I went on a rant about this several episodes ago. We learned those in the epigraphs. I think I'm right.
Or is it ferrochemy that's both? I think you're right.
I think allomancy is both. I whatever it is, I argued that it should be the other way. But I think allomancy is both. I'm going to go look that up here in a second. But so if allomancy is both, it's then using ruins power to destroy ruins power, which is weird. Like, if I remember from the Final Empire, all Kelsey has to do is, like, use allomancy around ATM and it destroys it. And that's, like, a well-known fact of Mistborns, is that you can destroy ATM with allomancy just using it nearby.
Was it... I feel like it wasn't, like, ATM. Like, if you have a whole bunch of ATM in your pocket, using allomancy doesn't break it.
Right.
But the crystals, I feel like that was the term that was used, that creates the geodes or the ATM, that's the sensitive part. So the crystals that are in the pits that secrete whatever essence forms the ATM, that's what you're breaking when you allomance nearby.
Okay.
But I feel like we're still stuck on the same question that we kind of asked at the time, which was, why does just performing allomancy break those crystals? Which at the time we just kind of took for okay fact. But now that we know that the pits is in perpendicularity, like why would allomancy affect us that way?
And I mean, the only reason why I want to know is for moving forward. Like,
right,
if you're able to replicate destroying a perpendicularity, that seems like a important fact to know moving forward for other storylines.
But clearly, or maybe not clearly, maybe we need that missing piece. Maybe the pits is different. Maybe the pits of Hathsin is a different kind of perpendicularity. It's, as far as we've seen, not a pool of water. Maybe it's in somehow a different form that's more fragile than a pool of coalesced investiture.
Personally, until proven otherwise, I am under the assumption that this perpendicularity is different, that it is. But if we find more information in Era 2 or something that changes this, then then that's cool. But right now I'm under the assumption that it is different, it is unique, because I don't see a way that this could happen with any of the other perpendicularities. Logically, in Mistborn Era 1, it makes sense. It sort of makes sense to me how it happens. I think the only part that I feel like is a gray area for me is the mechanics of was destroying those, like I said, I keep calling them geodes, destroying those pods or whatever. What is that really, the destruction of the perpendicularity itself? Or was there something else that was damaged, or was that more like a fuel line? I don't know. I'm unclear on that.
So,
is investiture needed and that's why it broke? No idea.
So I just looked it up. Allomancy, obviously, is of preservation. Hemallergy is of ruin. Barochemy is both. So, Elliot, you were right. So it is preservation's raw power that's destroying ruin's perpendicularity, which is interesting. If there's an obvious answer that we should be coming to, please let us know in the comments. But until then, we will keep postulating. All right. Traffic in and out of Scadrial. As far as I know, the Ghost Bloods don't exist yet. I could be wrong about that, but I don't think the Ghost Bloods exist yet. So what is that?
But we do know that the Ghost Bloods do originate from Scadrial.
Correct.
So it would make sense that the Ghost Bloods would originate from a high traffic planet or whatever you want to call it. So I wouldn't go to this traffic is Ghost Bloods, more maybe this traffic is some of the origins of the Ghost Bloods, or Scadrial is in the process or maybe just becoming a hub for world hopping, and naturally that's where Ghost Bloods would form or meet or headquarter or whatever.
Of all the planets we've seen, I feel like Scadrial would not be your vacation destination as world hopper.
Not at the current time, no.
Yeah. Which I do think is funny. At the end, we see maybe promising, you know, yeah. He gets some flowers and stuff.
Paradise.
But I think that's funny. Anyways. So I have a question if we're done talking about that at the moment.
Yeah, what's up?
So Kelsier is calling Preservation Fuzz.
Yes.
That's his name for him, because Preservation is all like fallen apart almost. Pretty much fallen apart. I don't know how to better describe it. He's like not fully there, like physically, like the embodiment of Preservation as Kelsier is seeing it is not fully present. Like there's pieces of him missing. It gives me a little bit of visuals of, I don't know if y'all have seen the newest Spider-Verse movie, but it makes me think of Spot from that movie. That's all I'll say. Visually. Anyways, y'all need to watch that movie if you haven't. It's wonderfully fantastic. It's excellent.
I've been meaning to.
All that being said, he calls him Fuzz, and he's got a lot of missing pieces, and it's interesting to see a shard in this way. I'm thinking of our other experiences, like we see ruin a lot in Era 1. We've seen a bit of cultivation in Stormlight, and we've seen Odium. And this feels like a very different experience, or very different time seeing Preservation versus other shards. Obviously, he's spread thin because of his like struggle against ruin. Like I understand that, but yeah, it's kind of sad. It almost feels akin to meeting Heralds in Stormlight, where you know that they're not at their former glory. Like they're not you know, what they're hyped up to be right now. They're stretched too thin, you know, pushed too far kind of thing. And I thought it was interesting. I was curious to know what y'all thought about that.
So it's interesting to note. Preservation says he's dead. But he's not splintered. He's just dead. So he's still like hanging around and decaying and wisping away. Like, we're going to bring back our Inside Out references. Like Bing Bong.
Bing Bong.
Yes. Bing Bong, like, he doesn't die on any given day. He just kind of slowly gets forgotten about and he wisps away.
Sad.
But Preservation appears to be killed by Ruin and then hang around for another, I don't know, 1,000 years, influencing stuff, talking to people. And then he dies in the Hero of Ages. Like, his vessel dies in the Hero of Ages, which I assume we'll get to at some point in this book, in Secret History. So, what does that even mean? Like, if he's still here hanging out, like, did he just start a timer on him, or what?
That was my original question when I was asking about cognitive shadows. And when you were starting to explain it, it sounded like, okay, yeah, your investiture in life kind of sets almost your timer of how long you have there. And I was like, okay, then that doesn't make sense to me of like, okay, so are cognitive shadows, are they still dwindling? We talked about that. I understand it now. If he's kind of been connected to the Will of Ascension, he's been connected in some way, shape, or form to a shard's power and is now a cognitive shadow. But this is kind of how whenever you started explaining it, this is how I felt. I was like, do they just, you know, slowly die in the cognitive realm instead of kind of passing straight through like an uninvested person may do? So yeah, that's interesting.
Here's my idea on that. If I'm wrong, please let me know down below. I believe, yes, you are correct. But what's another cognitive shadow that we know of? In the Cosmere. We've met several.
According to your Zyle. Predictions, Tien?
No, sorry. Tien's a vessel.
okay.
That's different. No, Zyle. Bingo. Okay, Zyle, he has a bunch of breaths with him and just feeds him, lives off of his breaths that he has in his jacket or his cloak or whatever. And I believe that's how he sustains himself. In theory, if you were to remove all the investiture from a cognitive shadow, they would have no choice but to go to the beyond. I believe is how it works. So if you remember at the end of Rhythm of War, do you guys remember Eshonai's point of view at the end of Rhythm of War? It's like the fourth to last chapter. It's called Mercy. Eshonai dies at the end of Words of Radiance, but the Stormfather gives her one last wish and lets her ride the storm with him at the end of that's revealed at the end of Rhythm of War. As a cognitive shadow, she had Timber with her, was becoming a Knight Radiant, or was beginning to say the oaths, had some investiture with her. So as her last wish, the Stormfather lets Esh and I ride the storm as a cognitive shadow, and then she goes into the beyond. Do you remember this? It's briefly mentioned at the end of Rhythm of War. Seems kind of out of place.
Yeah.
I don't remember that well. You saying that, I'm like, okay, yes, I kind of remember that, but if you quizzed me on it, I would have not gotten it correct.
Okay. So, as long as you tether to something that is continually giving you investiture, I believe you can cognitive shadow yourself indefinitely as long as you have the investiture for it. But in theory, you are slowly decaying over and over and over again. But a shard is, you know, more than enough for infinite time.
So do you think that... So you threw around, Trevor, the question of, is Kelsier tethered to Ruin's power, or is he tethered to Preservation's power? I'm gonna... I mean, this may be confirmed and you know and you're messing with us, but my thought is that he is tethered to Preservation's power. Uh-huh. One, because, you know, I don't know, maybe that's a reason why it's, you know, he starts draining more. He wasn't fully there to begin with, but I feel like that would be kind of a drain on resources, maybe, if you're keeping Kelsier attached. And two, could a shard... I keep saying staple, and I really like that term.
It's a great verb.
Could a shard staple, you know, Kelsier... Like, could Preservation staple Kelsier to Ruin's power? Ruin the Shard of Ruin, his investiture or anything? Could you do that? I feel like you couldn't.
I don't know.
So that'd be wild. What if, like, I don't know. You could just
use it as a weapon.
Like, yeah, exactly. Like, what if Cultivation started just stapling people to Odium or something? I don't know. Like,
Geranium.
Yeah, exactly.
This is stupid. This is stupid.
Crazy. No, that's not stupid. That's cool and exciting and awesome.
Oh, that's stupid. Okay, so if you were to ask Brandon Sanderson this, first of all,
has he been asked? Do you know?
Well, I'm about to use a term that he uses a lot, and it's not Raffo. There is a near infinite amount of investiture in any given shard. So people will ask him, can you drain a shard of its power with Nightblood? And his answer is always, Nightblood will be finished long before you can kill or drain a shard in any measurable way. So, yes, in theory, tying one person to a shard is decreasing their power, and actually you can put a pin in that for a second, but it's like subtracting one from 3 trillion. Like, it's not doing anything, right? So, but you could also argue that is how Preservation dies. Is Preservation is sustaining all life on Skadriel with Preservation's power, right? And that's what makes Preservation marginally weaker than Ruin, and that's why Preservation loses in the Hero of Ages. Tracking with me?
Yes, that makes sense.
So yes. I mean, as far as I understand it, there's probably something that contradicts this. But yes, in theory, you could just keep stapling people to a shard and having a bunch of cognitive shadows.
Yeah, so I'm going to ask another question, which we probably don't have an answer to. So, as you saying that makes me think, like, I feel like Preservation should be more, you know, I'm going to continue this thought, so bear with me. My thought is, shouldn't Preservation then be a bit more aware and godlike here? The reason I ask you to stay with me is I understand he's not splintered, but dead or not in his full state, you know, like, yeah, so it's different, but I'm like, how, I want to know how different it is, and I don't know that we have the answers for that, but I'm like, so has he been decaying for a long time? How rapid is that? You know, I'm going to use your 3 trillion example or whatever. Like, if he has 3 trillion investiture and he dies, does he go, I don't know. I want to know the math of that, you know? Right. And I think that's not, my prediction is that information is not out there or measurable. It's more hypothetical, but I, you know, that's where my thought is. I'm like, I feel like he should be stronger still, but I don't know how long he's been like this, and I don't know what it means to die as a shard and what that does to his power, you know? There's a lot of questions going around in my head now about that, about, like, I want to know way more specifics about the shard's power. So, yeah, there you go.
You have any input, Elliot, before I move on to something else?
Just one thing I'm barely remembering, maybe you can help me with this. I was trying to flip through the pages and find it to help with your, is Kelsier tied to Preservation or Ruin question. Isn't there a moment where they talk about, like, becoming a vessel? And Kelsier's like, oh, just give me the power. I can do that.
Yes.
And I feel like the answer, I can't remember. Was he talking about preservation or was he talking about ruin? I can't even remember. I think it's preservation, right? Because I think the answer, what the answer that comes back is, no, we can't do that. You're not connected enough to
yes.
me.
Yes, that is.
I think is what he says.
You're right. So they're talking about taking up preservation's power. And Kelsier's like, oh, yeah, just let me do that. And preservation says, no, you're closer to ruin than you are to me. You're not allowed. So, yes, you're right.
Right. They're talking about the well. They're talking about the well. Yes. Can he take up the power and do what they suspect Vin is not going to do, which she indeed doesn't do? Okay. I don't know if that helps with our theories at all to say like who Kelsier is more connected to, capital C connected to.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was talked about.
For the record, I do believe it's preservation, but I was just throwing ruin out there as a possibility. But also, as we know how Scadrial ends up by the end of presumably this book, unless it goes further than The Hero of Ages, it doesn't really matter, right? Because preservation and ruin end up in the same vessel. They're going to be in the same areas. It's not a big deal whether it's right. ruin or preservation. It's still going to have the same limitations at the end of The Hero of Ages. Okay. Enough of the boring shards and cool Cosmere implications. Onto the main character. Spanky. Spanky, the main character of the Cosmere. Hoid shows up on a floating corpse named Spanky. What did you guys think of Spanky?
I was so confused. I talked about it at the beginning of this. You asked me how I was doing. And I said a little confused. These are the kinds of things that make me a little confused. When Hoid comes rowing in on a dead body, because I was a little confused by this too. It's cognitive realm, right? So solid is water and water is solid. Kelsier can apparently walk around just fine, but maybe that's because he's a cognitive shadow. Hoid, I guess, cannot. So he's got to float around on something. So he picks a body that's apparently maybe not dead.
Do you have any input, yeah. Paul, before I read something?
Well, for one, this was my favorite Hoid intro to a story that we've read so far, of just pure ludicrous, like, ridiculousness. Absolutely wild. I may have misunderstood. We'll talk about this more. I read through this quickly, you know, audiobook, listened along, and I understood it as, like, Hoid has this dead body to be closer to the cognitive realm, to be like to toe the line with, like, Kelsier is physically dead, but I don't understand the logistics of how that could work logically, so I don't know. I'm not gonna make any firm yeah this is what's going on statements, but that's how I kind of took it. That's how I kind of understood it roughly, was like Hoid is rowing atop this Spanky because it's just how you travel, you know, to stay above, just at the lip above the cognitive realm, I guess, because he doesn't want to be down there with the dead people, you know, or whatever. I don't know.
Falling perhaps forever.
It was a bit confusing. Yeah.
Okay, so this might be a spoiler in that it confirms that Spanky never shows up again in the Cosmere, but I'm going to read you the the Spanky Coppermine page, because it's funny. Spanky is the nickname given by Hoid to a spirit corpse of unknown origin that he rides in the cognitive realm around Scadrial. Spanky is a cognitive shadow. Hoid speaks to Spanky, and they are able to mumble something in return, so they seem to retain a low level of sapience. It is difficult to move cognitive shadows between planets, so it is likely that Spanky physically died on Scadrial. There are multiple methods of becoming a cognitive shadow in the Cosmere, but they are relatively rare on Scadrial. Spanky's origin and the reason why they are mostly unresponsive to their surroundings are unknown. And that's the page.
That's pretty cool.
All right.
So there are no answers.
I know. I mean, I have to ask you, because I've stayed away from looking into any Words of Brandon content over the years. You know, I've done my best to not be spoiled on anything. So I'm very out of the loop with all that. Has Brandon been asked more clarifying questions a bit around Spanky?
I scroll down to the bottom. Trivia. Words of Brandon. Despite the rarity of cognitive shadows on Scadrial, Spanky is not someone important in the Cosmere.
Okay. That's it.
Blasphemy.
My thought is wrong. Yeah, my thought is I'm like, you know, down the line, could we ask Brandon for a little bit, like just a little short story?
Yeah.
Background for Spanky, you know, just give us a little bit of background there, you know? Like a Hope of Elantris type of, you know.
Yeah.
40-minute audiobook brief synopsis of Spanky.
Spanky needs to make an appearance in Arcanum Unbounded 2.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, Trevor, you said there are no more answers about Spanky, but there are more questions. Hoyt does something suspicious.
Yes.
In this scene between Kelsier and the Drifter, as Kelsier dubs him. They're just chatting. They're like sparring. You talked about it. Kelsier gets unreasonably upset when Hoyt just shows up and wants to use the portal. So they're kind of just spouting insults at each other. And then Hoyt pulls something out of his like shirt, kind of tries to hide it, and the verbs are confusing. Administers something glowing to Spanky and his ore, and then shoves it back in his shirt or whatever he does. Almost with like a, you didn't see that. And Kelsier's confused. And I'm very confused. What the heck was that about?
I'm glad you brought that up because I'm wondering the same thing. It felt to me, this was reminiscent in my mind of seeing the dark sphere at the start of Stormlight, where you're like, okay, what is that? I need to know all the details about it, and I don't know if I'll get answers.
Is it as simple as just, so you just gave us a little lesson on cognitive shadows, and you mentioned that the cognitive shadow has to have investiture to keep going. Is that all it is? Is he's got to keep his cognitive shadow there? So he's feeding it investiture every few minutes?
More specifically, it might be Stormlight, because it glows, and it's in, I don't know, maybe it's not, but.
That would be my best guess, I feel like, is like, it felt like Stormlight. I mean, obviously, if we're pointing to any of our sources of investiture that we can point to right now, that would be the one that I would guess.
My first thought was a Mistborn vial, that where they had their metals like in alcohol or whatever they talk about.
Yeah, we've never.
Okay, but also something interesting. Well, no, I don't know. Never mind.
Have we ever seen investiture in liquid form besides in a perpendicularity?
Breaths, metal, Stormlight,
symbols.
Leaking air.
And stacking.
Stacking.
True.
Yes.
Stacking.
Told you there'd be Yumi spoilers, people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Interesting. Elliot, unrelated. We get an answer to your multiple mist spirit theory way back in The Well of Ascension.
We get a few answers throughout this. I'm excited. I like answers.
Yeah.
The multiple spirit one is by far the most helpful, because I was confused, even still by the end of Hero of Ages, why the mists seem to behave bipolarly. I don't know what the right word is there. Confusing in a lot of ways. They would help the heroes and then hurt the heroes and then help the heroes and then hurt the heroes. Well, at least we get a few examples. That's because one of the instances where the Mist Being tries to murder Elend in the tent.
Yeah.
Vin saves him. Well, yeah, that was Ruin pretending to be preservation.
Yep.
So the Mist is preservation, but Ruin also pretends to be Preservation's Mist. So I was right to be confused.
And if you remember in Phadrex, when Vin is being chased by like another spirit, she's like, that one's deliberately not ruined because I know what ruin feels like. And then, yeah. And then like three chapters later, it is ruin. That's why, because the first one wasn't, and then the second one was. So, yeah.
Yep. And then we were confused why the mist being stabs Elend at the Well of Ascension. And we dissected that one and got to an almost the answer of maybe that was truly trying to help the heroes, even though it was stabbing Elend. Well, lo and behold, it was Preservation's knife and Preservation's arm, but it was Kelsier who grabbed it and shoved it into Elend because Preservation is Preservation and can't unpreserve Elend. Yep. So Kelsier has to do it for him.
Yep.
Fascinating.
I've heard this term used of secret history. Does secret history feel like a fan fiction to you? Of someone just not wanting Kelsier to be dead, so they write him in to like a bunch of other scenes behind the scenes?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially with just the unhinged nature of him calling everyone anything but their real name.
Huh?
You know, it's very like, you know, he talks about clubs and docks and, you know, his whole crew had not their... Well, some were quoted it sort of their real names, but it doesn't feel like a real name. And then now he has Fuzz and Drifter, and it's just it's a mess. And it's very Kelsier. I think this is actually way more telling about Kelsier's character and like personality than maybe not character, but personality and like personality quirks, maybe more than we even see in The Final Empire, which I think is really funny. But we talked about them, and I still think it's funny. My first read through, going through Mistborn on my own, I didn't think Kelsier was that ridiculous. Like, I thought of him way more heroically, and now I like him a lot. I think he's really cool, but he's not my, like, stereotypical hero figure, if you will. Like, maybe, like, Rayadin is or something like that, you know?
I'm enjoying the behind the scenes look. It's funny. I think what I'm comparing it the most to in my mind, Trevor, you've compared The Final Empire a couple of times to a heist story.
Yeah.
In your classic heist movie, after the climax, there's often the like, and now let's go see all the things that you didn't get to see throughout the story that actually answers all your questions, you know?
Yeah.
Here's all the reveals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. The flash through all the scenes to show you what was really happening and all the little details you missed along the way where you could have figured it out, but you didn't. Ha ha. Isn't this cool? That's what this is we're kind of going back and seeing the what's around the corner of each of the scenes that we've been in before. I think I'm enjoying it because it's helping me appreciate the Mistborn Era 1 books a little better. I don't know that Secret History is going to rank super high for me in Cosmere Works, but it's helping Mistborn maybe elevate a little bit. Things like the Mist being confusion is getting explained a little bit here. And actually, even just one page into Secret History here, I got a little nugget that helped me feel a little bit better about Kelsier's entire plot line from The Final Empire. If you've watched our like book wrap up on The Final Empire, I complain a bit about Kelsier's twist that, oh, surprise, he was planning to die the whole time. And I got mad about that because I was saying, hey, we've been in Kelsier's head. Kelsier would have been thinking about that. There's a little line. It's almost like Brandon heard me and was like, hold on, let me slip a little explanation for you into Secret History. There's a one-liner in the first page where we're seeing that scene again where Kelsier is facing Lord Ruler and he realizes he's going to die. He thinks to himself, also, let me back up a second. He uses the 11th metal, sees the other version of Rashik, realizes, crap, that's not going to help me very much. And then he thinks to himself, okay, If that's the case, I'm going to have to move to my contingency plan, basically. That right there helps me understand, okay, sacrificing himself was not plan A. Plan A was use the 11th medal and beat the Lord Ruler right then and there. But it didn't work, and so Kelsier was prepared to sacrifice himself as a martyr for the cause if he had to. That's way more palatable for me as a plot line than, surprise, I was planning to sacrifice myself the whole time. So even just that one-liner helped me actually a lot with Kelsier's character.
I have to echo what you're saying. As in this secret history is really helping me see those like behind the scenes kind of look at Mistborn, and it's really helped me look at Mistborn Era 1 and see a lot of the questions and details and things going on. So we also see the Lord Ruler again, though, don't we?
Oh yeah.
In here, he comes here, and they talk. I don't remember. Do they talk for a bit? I don't know why I'm fuzzy on that, but
they do.
The Lord Ruler says, "I've already killed you twice now."
Yeah, exactly.
Because one of his last lines when he kills Kelsier is, "I've killed you before," and then that's when he actually kills Kelsier at the end of the Final Empire.
Yeah,
and then he comes into Secret History and says, "I've killed you twice now. Why are you still here?"
This is really ridiculous, but it's neat, and this makes me curious just going forward also. Like, are we going to see, you know, as we go forward in Secret History, are we going to see Kelsier, like, reunite with Ven and reunite with Elend? Or I guess he wasn't in life that united with Elend at all, but, you know, are we going to see things like that? Because it seems like we're covering those moment, like big moments, and that we're going to get a behind the curtains look at what happens whenever these characters die, you know, like they're coming here and Kelsier's there. So are we going to get to see more of that? Which that would be really interesting. I think that would, I imagine if there's a reuniting moment with Vin, that we might have a bit more of a sincere moment. This is prediction territory, I guess, for as we look forward. But that's something that I've been thinking about. That interests me.
Yeah. I mean, think about this. Zile is a cognitive shadow and interacts with Stormlight characters in the physical realm.
Yep.
Is it?
He just has to figure out how to do that.
Right, exactly. It seems possible, although we know schedules may be a little different, it seems possible that Kelsier could figure out how to get a body back in the physical realm, but yeah, maybe he just needs someone to teach him how to do that.
I didn't even put that together. Wow. This is a dumb question. Zile is, like, dead?
He dies
at the end of...
So
Warbreaker,
he doesn't
a minute.
He does not die at the end of Warbreaker.
Okay.
He does, however, classify himself as a cognitive shadow. He defines himself as that in Rhythm of War.
Gotcha.
Which would imply that he like borrowed a body on Roshar, and that's how he showed up. But that's from the perspective of Vasher? Style, that he may not be the same thing that Kelsier is. He may not have died. He might just be like
a world. It was under the concept he was just like a world hopper,
right? So what it could be is he's hung out in the cognitive realm so long that his physical body kind of just left, and now he's a cognitive shadow. You could argue it that way.
Is that all that different from what Kelsier is?
Right. That's a good question. I don't know.
I wasn't coming into this thinking I would be questioning what the heck Vasher is at all.
Yes.
But that's interesting. Because my understanding is he didn't die, but we don't know. I mean, it could very well happen. There's a lot of stuff that we still haven't seen or isn't out there on paper, I guess, but... Yeah, I've always thought of him and Azure or Vivenna, right? That they were just like world hoppers. And that's kind of like how we spot them or know how to know who they are because they've made it over there. Like they've come through the cognitive realm to Roshar or whatever. But yeah, no. Interesting.
Anything else, gentlemen, before we do a Stormlight refresher?
Let's do it.
All right, gentlemen. It's been a couple weeks. Anyone know the score? I do, but without looking it up, Elliot.
4-2? I don't remember.
5-3.
Okay.
It is 5-3 in Elliot's favor. Paul, you're going to lead. Here comes your chapter name. I'm going to give you the title of a chapter. You need to give me a brief synopsis as accurately as you can. And as Elliot had the strategy before, as vaguely as you can so that I give you the points of what happened in the chapter.
Okay.
Your chapter name from the Stormlight Archive, Walking the Grave.
I have two thoughts that are hopping around in my head. I'm going to go with that this is Kaladin and his bridge crew in the chasms as they're kind of doing their, like, they're on chasm duty and going through the chasms. Yeah. Do I need to elaborate further? I don't know if you know the chapter I'm talking about.
I mean, the fact that I'm hard, I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. We have our first point on a chapter name. Here, the actual chapter is Words of Radiance, where Kaladin and Teft take the new Bridge 4 recruits down into the chasms for training as like a recruitment process. Now you're a part of Bridge 4.
Okay. But I think that is the one I was thinking of. Like, okay. I think I was on, but I don't know if I was confident in it. But
so it's not in the Way of Kings where they spend a lot of time in the chasms, you know, like doing their katas and training the bridge crews. It's when Words of Radiance, after they're free, they go back down there with the new recruits. So I'll give it to you. 1 point for Paul.
Wow.
Congratulations. All right.
Don't worry, I'll miss the last one again.
Yeah, that should just be a point for the week.
Yeah,
by itself. Deal. Like now it's 5-4. Okay, Elliot, here's your quote ID. Who's speaking? Bah. You don't even take present threats on my life seriously.
I'm trying to not verbally process this in order to give hints to my competitor over there.
I applaud you because I can't. I have to talk through it verbally if I'm going to guess.
Because I can think of a couple characters, but if I run through them all and get it wrong, then I'll have given you a bunch of options. I'm going with what I feel like is the obvious one. This is Elokar.
You're correct. This is Elokar.
Yes.
Talking to Dalinar.
Yep.
All right, 1-1. Back to you, Paul. Here's your review. I will read the review. You need to tell me what they rated it out of 5 stars and what book this is on. Anything in the Cosmere, but anything that you've read in the Cosmere, but heavily weighted to Stormlight. I should start by saying that this heifer took me right around 10 months to finish with several periods of backburner status. Not that it wasn't good, but because it's such a big commitment. 1,000 plus pages. If my relationships with books were compared to romantic relationships, I'd have several scarlet letters. I don't have the kind of patience a long book requires. A book with 500 pages is really pushing it for me. I'm more of a 450 max kind of guy, with an average page count closer to 325. But, despite this, I see the upsides. I see more pros than cons. I see a future with the Stormlight Archive. and I'm finally willing to settle down for the long haul and commitment. Who knew?
This is a really, wow, that is quite an eccentric review. Wow, I really have just such a great picture, like, into this individual's life, actually. Preferences, you know, romance. Wow, it really took me through it all. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so it's obviously it was stated it has to be a Stormlight Archive book, if that wasn't obvious from the 1,000-page count
and
notice.
Stormlight Archive in the review. They say mm-hmm. that in...
Yes. So, I'm not worrying about the book right now. I think this is the Way of Kings. He's ready to settle down for the long term. So I'm like, he liked it once he got to the end of it. But is he happy about it? My instinct says that this is a 5-star, actually, because I think people rate aggressively. I think they're extreme, either 1 or 5 stars. But it's logically more like a 4-star, 3-star. I'm gonna go with that this is the Way of Kings for 4 out of 5 stars.
Elliot.
I'm going to add a few thoughts to that, but I think I'm going to get to the exact same answer you gave, which I know is boring, but I don't think I can talk myself differently. I think this person clearly struggled 10 months, 9 months to read the book. That's a long time. Like, that's longer than we take to read on the podcast when we're reading like 2 or 3 chapters a week. So clearly they set it down multiple times and came back later. So by the time they got to the end, they finished it. There's going to be a sense of pride associated with that of, hey, I made it. It sat on the nightstand for almost a year, but I made it through. And I think that's going to be reflected in their review, regardless of how they like specifically felt on it. They're going to rate it higher because of that sense of pride they feel in their accomplishment. I don't know if I can quite go 5, though. Same thoughts as you, Paul. 5 maybe, but 4 seems a little more in line with this. Way of Kings has got to be, I don't think you get through Way of Kings and then go have this torturous experience with Words of Radiance. You're either kind of all in or not all in after Way of Kings. So it's got to be Way of Kings and you have 4 stars.
You guys, with all respect to people who write reviews on Goodreads, you guys give way too much credit to logic in these reviews. this is a 4 out of 5. So you both get a point.
Wow.
For
yeah, look at us.
Words of Radiance.
What?
So they're complaining about the length after getting through the Way of Kings. Yeah. Go figure that one out.
I'm sorry, Trevor. I'm stealing the microphone here. Okay. I'm currently rereading The Way of Kings. And I enjoy it because I love, you know, Brandon Sanderson's a great author. There's a lot of admirable parts. But man, it is still a long book, and it's still The Way of Kings is at the start, you know, there's a lot of world building. So I'm like, it's crazy for me to believe that this was a review of Words of Radiance. They I don't know what the review for Way of Kings was, but they really read The Way of Kings and then were saying this about Words of Radiance. That's crazy. Okay, I'm sorry, rant over. But that's wild. I'm proud we got 4 to 5 stars, though. That was the one I was uncertain on, you know.
Alrighty. 2 to 2. Going into the trivia question, Elliot is going to take it first. According to Voren teaching, what is the old magic?
Oh, gosh. I might be crossing my wires here. But the only thing that's popping into my mind regarding the old magic is I didn't have this associated with Vorinism in my mind, though. It's a visit to the Night Watcher, who then gives you a boon and a curse. And it's the magical effects that you now are stuck with for the rest of your life, like seeing the world upside down and walking on the roof.
You are correct. It is visiting the Night Watcher. However, There are three more answers.
Oh.
Paul, give me one of them, and then I will send it back to Elliot, and he has to win his point again.
Interesting. So my answer that I was really proud of was the same one.
Okay.
And so, Vorinism, old magic.
The old magic. All three of those words are capped.
The old magic. Okay, so one of the three refers to taking a trip to the Night Watcher and receiving a boon and a curse.
One of the four.
One of the four, so there are three others.
There are three more that are referred to as the old magic. The Night Watcher is one of them.
I have two guesses that are swirling around in my head, and I'm not going to say both of them out loud in case I get this right. I'm going to say that soul casting is part of the old magic.
Good guess, but you are incorrect. Elliot will get the point. So the four taboo old magic things in Vorin teaching is the Night Watcher, void binding, old void, or all, what's the void bringers, is like anything that has to do with void bringers would be called the old magic, void spren, or anything that has to do with seeing the future, such as gambling or visions or anything like that, would classify as the old magic. So any of those four answers you can qualify as the old magic. Elliot gets the point for the week, even though Paul got the chapter name to lead the week.
That's tough.
Come back.
That was a good one. Yeah.
That was a good one. Maybe my quote idea was a little too easy to get Elliot back in the door for the week. All right.
Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to close the episode. Do you have something to say?
Oh, well, I was going to say, Elliot, did you have guesses, other guesses on the old magic?
The only guess I would have thrown out, which I knew was wrong, I was just trying to think of sources of magic around Roshar, would be the magic fish in the Pure Lake.
Yes.
Which I'm sure the Vorins probably don't even know about, but yeah, magic.
Okay. I was just curious.
All right, 6-3, moving in to next week. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
On we go.
Hasta luego.